Welcome back, everybody, to the Deep Dive. We've got a really fascinating case to dig into today, and I'm really excited to have you here with me to help break it all down.
I am too. I think this is a good one and should raise some really interesting points for our listeners.
I think so too. You know, we've done a lot of deep dives on death penalty cases in the past, but this one is a little different.
Yeah, this one really gets into some of the nitty-gritty details about how sentencing works, especially when you have a death penalty case going up on appeal.
Yeah, and, you know, for our listeners who are really into criminal procedure and constitutional law, this is going to be a real deep dive.
I think they're going to like this one.
So shall we jump right in?
Let's do it.
Okay, great. So the case we're looking at today is Brown v. Sanders,
mm-hmm.
which was decided by the Supreme Court back in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And it all revolves around this this question of what happens when some of the reasons the jury used to sentence someone to death are later found to be invalid.
Right. And it really gets at, you know, when you have a death sentence, can that sentence still be upheld even if the jury relied on factors that were later deemed unconstitutional?
Exactly.
That's a pretty heavy question.
Yeah, there's a lot at stake there. And this case really highlights some of the complexities and I think maybe even some of the potential problems with how the death penalty is applied in this country.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there's no easy answers here. It's really interesting to see how the court grappled with these really complicated issues.
So to set the stage a little bit, this case all started with a truly horrible crime.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a home invasion that turned deadly. Ronald Sanders and an accomplice broke into this house, tied up the two people who lived there, and beat them savagely. Sadly, one of the victims, Janice Allen, died from the injuries she sustained during the attack.
Absolutely horrific. And after Sanders was convicted, the big question became what his punishment would be. During the penalty phase of the trial, the jury had to consider what are called special circumstances under California law.
Right. So in California, you have these special circumstances that can make someone eligible for the death penalty. Think of it like a checklist that the prosecution has to go through to convince the jury that the crime is serious enough to warrant the ultimate punishment.
Right. So they're like specific aggravating factors. They have to prove these things, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt to make the death penalty an option.
Right. And in Sanders' case, the jury found that four of these special circumstances were present, which meant he was eligible for a death sentence.
Makes sense.
But here's where things get really interesting. Years later, when the case made its way up through the appeals process, the California Supreme Court decided that two of the special circumstances that the jury had relied on were actually invalid. They had changed their interpretation of the law, basically.
Yeah, that's a big development. I mean, you would think that if two out of four of the reasons for giving someone the death penalty are suddenly taken off the table, the whole sentence would be in jeopardy.
You would think so, right. I mean, it's like, you know, you bake a cake and two of the main ingredients are suddenly found to be bad. You probably wouldn't eat that cake.
Probably not a good idea.
But in this case, the California Supreme Court said, no, the death sentence can still stand. They decided that even with two of the special circumstances gone, the remaining two valid ones were still enough to justify putting Sanders to death.
So basically, they said there was still enough there to warrant the most severe punishment.
Right. But Sanders and his lawyers obviously disagree, and they took the case all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And their main argument was that the jury's decision to sentence Sanders to death had been tainted by those two invalid special circumstances.
It's kind of like, you know, the jury saw this extra evidence that they shouldn't have seen and that might have pushed them towards a harsher punishment, even if they wouldn't have gone there without that extra information.
Right, exactly.
Makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah. So the big constitutional question that the Supreme Court had to wrestle with in this case was, does simply considering a sentencing factor that's later found to be invalid automatically violate a defendant's rights in a death penalty case? Does it make the entire sentencing process unfair?
It's a really important question, right? It gets at the heart of due process and whether the death penalty is being applied in a consistent and reliable way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's not an easy question to answer.
And to really grasp how the Supreme Court approached this issue, we need to understand a key distinction in how states handle death penalty cases, the difference between weighing and non-weighing states.
You know, this is where it gets kind of into the weeds a little bit, but it's really crucial to understanding the logic of the court's decision in Brown v. Sanders.
Absolutely, because this distinction between weighing and non-weighing states is at the very core of how they decided this case.
Okay, so for our listeners who might not be super familiar with these terms, can you give us a quick breakdown of what we mean when we talk about a weighing state versus a non-weighing state in the context of capital punishment?
Sure. So in a weighing state, the jury is given a very specific task. They have to look at a list of what are called aggravating factors. These are the reasons why the death penalty might be justified in a particular case.
Like the special circumstances we talked about in California.
Exactly. And then they have to weigh those aggravating factors against any mitigating factors, which are the reasons why the death penalty might not be appropriate. And the defense is going to present those mitigating factors.
Things like the defendant's age, their background, maybe any signs of remorse or mental illness, things like that.
Exactly. Those are all good examples. So in a weighing state, the jury is basically doing this balancing act. They're trying to figure out if the aggravating factors outweigh the mitigating factors.
So it's like a literal scale in their minds.
Right. Exactly. And if the aggravating factors tip the scale, then the jury can impose a death sentence.
Okay. I'm following you. Go. So what's different about a non-weighing state then?
Well, in a non-weighing state, the jury isn't required to do that kind of formal balancing act. Instead, they're given a much broader mandate to consider all the circumstances of the crime and the defendant's character when making their sentencing decision.
So it's a little bit more free-flowing.
It is, yeah. They still have to follow the law, of course, but they have more discretion in terms of what factors they consider and how much weight they give to each factor.
And California, where Ronald Sanders was tried, is a non-weighing state, right?
That's right. And this is going to be super important when we look at how the Supreme Court ultimately decided the case.
Okay, so let's go back to Ronald Sanders and his appeal. How did this whole weighing versus non-weighing thing come into play when the Supreme Court was looking at his case?
Well, the majority opinion was written by Justice Scalia, and he focused heavily on the fact that California is a non-weighing state. And based on that, he made two key arguments for why Sanders' death sentence should be upheld.
All right, let's take those one at a time. What was the first main point that Justice Scalia made?
His first point was that the invalidated special circumstances didn't actually affect Sanders' eligibility for the death penalty. Even after those two were thrown out, the other two that were still valid were enough under California law to put him in the category of people who could be sentenced to death.
So basically, Justice Scalia was saying, even if the jury had never heard about those two invalid special circumstances, Sanders still would have been eligible for the death penalty based on the other two that were valid.
Exactly. And he drew this really important distinction between what he called eligibility and selection. Eligibility is simply whether the defendant meets the legal criteria to even be considered for the death penalty.
Like checking the boxes on the application.
Exactly. And then selection is a separate process that the jury goes through to actually decide whether to impose the death penalty on someone who is eligible.
So, like the interview after you've submitted your application.
Precisely. And in Sanders' case, Justice Scalia was saying that the invalidated special circumstances didn't affect his eligibility. They only potentially affected the selection process.
I see. And since California is a non-weighing state, where the jury has more leeway to consider all sorts of factors when making their decision, Justice Scalia wasn't convinced that the invalid special circumstances had actually swayed the jury toward a death sentence.
That's right. And that leads us to his second key argument, which is really at the heart of how non-weighing states operate.
Okay, what was that second argument?
Justice Scalia emphasized that California law specifically allows juries to consider all the relevant facts surrounding the crime when making their sentencing decision. This is part of what makes it a non-weighing state. They don't have that strict list of aggravating factors that the jury has to stick to.
So Justice Scalia was basically saying that even though those two special circumstances were later found to be invalid, the underlying facts that led to those special circumstances were still fair game for the jury to consider.
That was his reasoning, yes. He pointed to this very broad category in California law called circumstances of the crime, which gives juries a lot of latitude to consider all sorts of evidence about what happened during the crime.
I see. So even though those two specific legal labels, those special circumstances, were off the table, the jury could still have taken into account the facts that those labels were based on when deciding whether to sentence Sanders to death.
Exactly. And because of that, Justice Scalia concluded that no new or impermissible information had really been introduced into the sentencing process. He was basically saying, look, the jury was always going to hear about these facts, even if those specific special circumstances hadn't been mentioned.
So for Justice Scalia, the fact that California is a non-weighing state was really crucial to his decision to uphold the death sentence in this case.
Absolutely. And he even specifically criticized the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which had overturned Sanders' death sentence, for relying on Supreme Court precedents that dealt with weighing states. He said those cases just didn't apply here because California's system is fundamentally different.
Interesting. So we can really see how this weighing versus non-weighing distinction is doing a lot of heavy lifting in Justice Scalia's analysis. But was everyone on the Supreme Court on board with this line of reasoning?
Not at all. Justices Stevens and Breyer both wrote pretty strong dissents.
What were their main concerns?
Well, Justice Stevens took issue with how the majority was interpreting the role of those special circumstances in California's system. He argued that even though California is a non-weighing state, the special circumstances still play this kind of dual role.
What do you mean by dual role?
Well, they don't just determine eligibility for the death penalty. They also have a real impact on how the jury actually makes its decision. They're presented to the jury as these really serious aggravating factors.
So even if they don't technically tip the scales in a formal sense, they still carry a lot of weight in the jury's minds.
That was Justice Stevens's point, yeah. And he was concerned that by focusing only on the eligibility question, the majority was ignoring this other crucial function that these special circumstances serve in the sentencing process.
So he was worried that even if the jury technically could have considered those underlying facts anyway, the fact that they were presented in the context of these invalid special circumstances could have unfairly prejudiced them against Sanders.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. He was worried that the invalid special circumstances could have kind of poison the well, so to speak, even if the water itself was technically still drinkable.
Okay, that makes sense. What about Justice Breyer's dissent? What was his take on all this?
Justice Breyer took a bit of a different approach. He didn't really focus on the specifics of California's system or the role of special circumstances. Instead, he argued that the court should apply what's called harmless error review in all death penalty cases, regardless of whether the state is weighing or non-weighing.
Can you explain what you mean by harmless error?
Sure. So in a lot of legal cases, if a court makes a mistake during the trial, the case won't automatically be overturned on appeal. The appeals court will look at the mistake and ask, did this mistake actually affect the outcome of the case?
So it's like, if the judge mispronounced a word or something, it's probably not going to change the jury's verdict.
Right. That would be a harmless error. But if the mistake was something really big, like if the jury was shown evidence that they shouldn't have seen, then that might not be a harmless error. It might have actually influenced the outcome of the trial.
Okay. And how does that apply to Brown v. Sanders?
Well, Justice Breyer was basically saying that the court should always apply this kind of analysis when there's a question about invalid sentencing factors in a death penalty case.
So instead of just looking at whether the defendant was still technically eligible for the death penalty, Justice Breyer thought the court should always scrutinize whether the invalid factors actually had an impact on the jury's decision.
Exactly. He was concerned that the majority's approach, which relied so heavily on the non-weighing distinction, was too rigid. He thought it was creating a loophole where death sentences in non-weighing states could be upheld even if the jury's decision was potentially tainted by these invalid factors.
It sounds like Justice Breyer was really advocating for a more case-by-case approach, where the court would always look at the specific facts and try to determine whether the jury was actually influenced by the invalid information.
That's a good summary, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it really highlights the fundamental tension that was at play in this case. On the one hand, you have this concern for due process and making sure that the death penalty is applied fairly and consistently. And on the other hand, you have these really complex state laws and different approaches to sentencing that can make it hard to draw clear lines.
Yeah, and I think Brown v. Sanders really shows us how those two things can sometimes come into conflict. So before we wrap things up, can you tell us a little bit about the legal test that the Supreme Court laid out in this case? What would actually make an invalid sentencing factor unconstitutional under Brown v. Sanders?
Okay, so the court said that an invalid factor is only going to be a constitutional violation if it meets two criteria. First, it has to actually add some new aggravating element to the sentencing calculus. In other words, it has to introduce something that the jury wouldn't have been able to consider otherwise.
So it can't just be a restatement of something that was already permissible under a different legal label?
Right. And second, No other valid sentencing factor can allow the jury to consider the same underlying facts. So if the information that was conveyed by the invalid factor could have been brought up under some other valid provision of the law, then it's not going to be a constitutional problem.
And how did that test apply to Sanders' case?
Well, the court ultimately found that his death sentence didn't violate this test. Remember how we talked about that broad circumstances of the crime factor in California law? The court said that that factor was broad enough to encompass the underlying facts that had led to those two invalid special circumstances. So even though those special circumstances themselves were thrown out, the information they conveyed were still technically before the jury under this other valid provision.
So the court was basically saying that the invalid special circumstances didn't really change anything in terms of what the jury was allowed to consider.
That's right. And because of that, they upheld Sanders' death sentence.
I see. So Brown v. Sanders really highlights how important it is for lawyers and judges to understand the nuances of state sentencing laws, especially in death penalty cases. What might be an unconstitutional violation in one state might be perfectly fine in another state, depending on how their laws are written.
That's one of the big takeaways from this case, for sure. And it's why this case is so important for anyone studying criminal procedure or constitutional law. It shows how these really abstract legal concepts can have very real-world consequences in the most serious of cases.
Absolutely. So, to sum it all up, if you're dealing with a death penalty case where invalid sentencing factors are at issue, what's the most important thing to remember from Brown v. Sanders?
The first thing you need to do is figure out whether the state in question is a weighing state or a non-weighing state. That's going to make a huge difference in terms of how you analyze the case and what legal arguments you can make.
Right. And the second key point is that even if a sentencing factor is ultimately deemed invalid, the death sentence might still stand if the same underlying facts could have been considered by the jury under some other valid part of the law.
Exactly. It's all about whether that invalid factor actually introduced some new and improper element into the sentencing process. If it didn't, then the sentence is much more likely to be upheld.
Wow, that's a lot to think about. So for our listeners out there who are really interested in this kind of stuff, what would you say are some of the broader implications of this decision? What should they be paying attention to in terms of how Brown v. Sanders might be shaping future death penalty cases?
Well, one thing to consider is how this non-weighing distinction might affect appeals based on invalid sentencing factors. Could it be that death sentences in non-weighing states are now less likely to be overturned even if the jury considered improper information?
It's a question worth pondering for sure. And on that note, I think we'll wrap up this deep dive. It's been a really thought-provoking discussion, as always, and I really appreciate you joining me to break down this fascinating case.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And for our listeners, keep those brains churning, and we'll catch you next time on the deep dive.
See you then.